We say goodbye to Moore. He always had a smile, never a scowl. One of the greatest NFL journalists to report. He covered every game from touchdowns to fumbles. He was a legend in the sport. He will be missed by all who love him. And so we say goodbye, Mort. Russell Wilson, once a star so bright, cut from the team, vanished from sight. Sean Payton, a villain in the game. His deeds still tarnish his name. Richard Sherman, a second DUI, a fall from grace under the sky. But Braylon Edwards, a twist of fate, saved a life, sealing his noble fate. Everybody, this is William Del Pilar, and this is Points on the Board. Hello, everybody. I am riding solo here for a little while. We are transitioning my now former partner, Eddie Aparicio, to an all-NBA show. I mean, basketball is his shtick. He's good at it. He does basketball, not quite in fantasy basketball. I'm not talking about that. But he does NBA basketball like I used to do fantasy football. You can just rattle off the answers, the data, etc. It's his own natural gift. So we were just like, man, you need your own show. So we are working on that behind the scenes. But until then, I will be writing solo. I will either have I probably won't have a partner moving forward. The show will probably shorten. Some of it will go into streaming. Some topics will be put into the podcast, because there's so much news out there. But with that said, we have a great show for you today. We're going to talk about Russell Wilson. We found out that he's talking to the New York Giants since his release. The Pittsburgh Steelers have interest, the Falcons, etc. We're going to get into all of that. Russell Wilson is a deep discussion this week for the simple reason that he's still a good quarterback. I just saw a guy I respect, John Fraschella. He goes the exact opposite in terms of how he views Russell Wilson in terms of how I view him. And that's what makes all this debate fun. We also disagree on Justin Fields and Caleb Williams. And again, these are debates that nobody can win. Time will tell us who won. I still think Russell Wilson has something left in the tank. We're also going to talk about Chris Mortensen, Mort, one of the nicest, most affable, and first modern age, one of the first modern age insiders that I knew. And I didn't really know him. I met him a few times. That was it. But great guy, passed away. God bless him and his family as he begins his next journey. I'm going to talk about that, tell you a little story, how I met Chris, why it's one of my more exciting moments of my career. It's one of the moments in my career that sticks out above most others. Then we're going to have a couple of quick hits with Richard Sherman, once again making the news in a negative way. Always been a very controversial character. You either love him or hate him. I respect him. Very intellectual dude. I don't always agree with him, but he can always back his stuff up with data and facts. And a blast from the past, we are going to talk about Braylon Edwards, formerly of the Cleveland Browns and who knows how many other teams. Before we begin, where can you find us? Well, you can find us at grumblingsmedia.com. You can find the Points on the Board podcast, our entertainment podcast from a conservative point of view, The Red, White, and Rude, where, remember, politics is downstream of culture, and I give you the truth with that podcast. And then there's also my Fired Up podcast, a conservative podcast, and this conservative Latino does not hesitate about telling you how I escaped the plantation, how I encourage others, and we talk about political events, and I bring you ugly truths, as I call them. And then there's also our libertarian side with Big John and his interview show with the Big Questions with Big John, as well as the Free For All podcast. You can find those at Grumblings Media as well as our social media platforms, YouTube and Rumble, under the profile Grumblings Media, as well as traditional outlets, Apple, Spotify, Google, and Pandora. So let's get down to it. We all know Russell Wilson is on his way to being released officially right around March 13th, but he's already talking to teams. The Broncos informed him a few days ago that they would release him. It ends a 2-year stint with the team. And we all knew this was coming. Some thought the damage could be repaired. No, I've been covering this game long enough. Sean Payton is not a nice guy. In fact, I would view him closer to a vile human being than not. He's a bully. He is the architect of Bountygate. He was willing to take players out. Excuse me. Let me get a little comfortable here. He was willing to take players out. Take them out. Hurt them. End their careers. Because when you go out and target a player, there's a chance you could end your career. Any man that would condone that does not belong in the game. But hey, let's protect the guys we like. And I just don't like him. Never have, never will. He's also underachieved. His playoff record is abysmal when you look at how his teams were favored. Now, he's gotten a couple of bad calls, you know, but remember, division champ went and lost to the Seattle Seahawks wildcard team 1 year. You know, so he is what I would call overrated. You have to be a little special to win a Super Bowl, but you got to build a dynasty that can compete for more than just one. And he's never been able to get there. With Brees and with Drew Brees now retired, I think he's done. You know, he assumes he can go find a quarterback. That's not how the NFL works. And he's going to learn the hard way, I believe. Again, Russell Wilson has been permitted to talk with other teams. And it's not that I'm a big Russell Wilson fan either. I mean, he can be his own worst enemy. But with his release, the Broncos will take an $85 million cap hit. Denver gave up 5 picks, 2 first-rounders, and 3 players to Seattle for Wilson. Then they signed him to a 5-year, $242 million contract for a player who was 33 at the time. I was like, my God. And the fact that he was becoming his own worst enemy, and that's one reason Seattle was okay with moving on from him. He became a bit of a prima donna, super nice guy, but a prima donna nevertheless. And those players tend to not see the error of their ways that they would have years earlier when they weren't prima donnas and were the consummate player. The financial impact of this move, they're going to incur an NFL record $85 million dead cap hit. Wilson's 2024 salary of $39 million is already guaranteed. Translation, he's going to go play for the league minimum. I would be going to a team that is a quarterback away, period. I mean, not a quarterback away from making the playoffs, but a quarterback away from being able to compete for a Super Bowl. He still has a few years left. He still has, I'd say, anywhere from 1 to 3 years left with that body, as we saw last year. Great improvement over the year before because his back was against the wall. He needs to go back to his humble origins. But I believe that once he does that, he'll have 1 to 3 years left. His 2025 salary of $37 million was set to become guaranteed. Obviously, that's probably why they cut him. Spread over the years, if designated as a post-June 1st release, the cap would have been $35.4 million in 2024 and $49.6 million in 2025. But I'm not quite sure how the cap works and all this. I just know they're going to take an $85 million dead cap hit. Their salary cap is going to be hell for the next year. And Payton does not realize he's not a winning coach from the perspective of a winning coach with the Denver Broncos. People quickly forget it's been maybe a decade since he went to the Super Bowl last time. And, you know, they're going to expect him to get back there. You know, let's figure this out. When did Sean Payton win a Super Bowl? Let's see what it says. 2009. Oh, my God. Wow, it's been 15 years since he won a Super Bowl. 15 years. And that's my point. He's never even been close to sniffing it. You know? Overrated. Wilson's performance. Wilson had an 11-9 record as a starter. He passed for about 6,600 yards and had 42 touchdowns, 19 interceptions. He also helped the Broncos snap their 16-game losing streak to the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, people like to sit there and talk about his first year with the Broncos, and now that the story has died down, they kind of look to blame him because he's in the limelight. And what I'm talking about is Nathaniel Hackett. Everybody knew what an atrocious, despicable, pathetic excuse of a hire he was. I say despicable because the Broncos are despicable to every other guy they pass by to hire a bum like Nathaniel Hackett, who didn't even call plays in Green Bay got a start in the league and got this job because of Aaron Rodgers and Daddy Paul Hackett, he's a bum. And look what he did with the Jets. Oh, it was disgusting, disgraceful. So Russ was a victim of Nathaniel Hackett. Of course, his prima donna ways kind of, he needed a head coach like Hackett to pull that off, his own office, you know, place for his family. I mean, he had everything that none of the rest of the team. So with that, he could be his own worst enemy. Carl Mecklenburg said it best, and I was saying this as well, and as were others. It wasn't a big secret. Look, we questioned his leadership. He had his own private coach, his office at the facility, his family at training camp. Other team leaders didn't have these perks. This isn't high school. This is a man who hadn't won a Super Bowl in years as well and was seen as a partial blame along with Pete Carroll for not winning the second Super Bowl. This is a guy who did not play well down the stretch in Seattle, obviously did not play well last year. So you would think he would have been humble, but nah, Russ. Russell Wilson still carried that prima donna. He was a good guy, but he just got full of himself. Over the last 5 to 7 years, something changed in Wilson and he became that prima donna. He also stopped going through progressions as he once did when he entered the league. What you don't understand, people, oh, I'm sorry, I apologize. What some may not understand is when he first came into the league, he was the very first quarterback that did not evolve from a scrambler into a pocket quarterback who could run. He had that from day one. I've seen some reports that there talks about how he was a scrambler, doesn't scramble as much. That's a complete lie. That's an ignorant fool who doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. What made him so devastating on the field was he used his legs to buy time, then would go deep. And it irked you because he'd complete a magnificent pass, obviously with the help of great receivers, not a great receiver play. He didn't always have great receivers, but they made some great plays with him. Turns out Sean Payton doesn't like a scrambler. He may say he does, but he's lying. He wants a pocket quarterback that goes through his reads. And I will defend Sean Payton. That's what I would demand of my quarterbacks too. Before you take off and go running, you go through your reads. Then you go running. Unless it's a design run play or an option type play. And that's what Sean Payton means. He may say he doesn't mind having a scram quarterback, but he's lying. He wants a pocket quarterback who can use his legs to buy time and run as a last resort. He also wants the quarterback that can hit his wide out in stride, and that's important. That is what makes the West Coast offense one of the most dominating, unbeatable offenses. You know, when you get oversaturated with teams using quasi-West Coast as their own variation or aspects of it, you know, it's predicated on the play calling. The West Coast offense was predicated on hitting your receiver in stride. You know, and there is a difference from designs to get your guy open to designs that mean he may not be quite open, but you have enough of a window to hit him in stride. People don't know football who think they know football. Ugh. You can tell based on Payton's reactions on the sideline, as well as what other analysts who have played the game who have seen that close up firsthand, like Mark Schlereth, you know, he wasn't his quarterback. You know, he could tell that from the get-go. And a hat tip, too, why Russell Wilson, Sean Payton did not work out from day one. Some of this information came from The Herd, his radio show, and, you know, you can get it elsewhere, but I like to give some props when it's due. Dead money cap implications. Again, the Broncos will absorb an $85 million hit in dead money in 2024, record-breaking amount, and the more in the following years. This will also have little flexibility to sign free agents, as they're about $20 million over the salary cap. Translation, they won't have depth. So they could have an NFL Super Bowl-ready team. They could do that. But the moment these players start getting hurt, then comes JV squad scrub A, JV squad scrub B. And the NFL is a game of attrition. And these are the type of decisions that prove detrimental and keep teams from making the Super Bowl. The average fan doesn't see it that way. Oh, man, look, they have all these people there, a starter. You know, so when a starter gets injured, they assume a starter of similar quality is coming in. No, that's ignorance. It rarely happens. But the drop in talent will be as if dropping off a cliff in some positions. The Broncos' future is uncharted territory. They're likely going to draft a quarterback in the first round, possibly Oregon's Bo Nix. That's what you're hearing the talk. He's rumored to be Sean Payton's favorite. They must make some painful roster moves to get into salary cap compliance. They have 6 draft picks, but only 2 in the first 3 rounds. Payton will only have a year or two before folks begin questioning his legacy, and they should. 2009 since he won the Super Bowl. Overrated in my book, meaning he's been living off that rep for years. Kind of like I sat there and said that about Michael Thomas. Had a few good years because the Saints are going to release him this year. But he's been living off his rep as a complainer, has done nothing, is costing them money for being an overpaid wide receiver now. You know, so in a sense, I thought Payton leaving the Saints was a good move for both he and the team. I think he had maxed out. He had run his course there. Payton also has no history of grooming quarterbacks. Breeze had 5 years of success with the Chargers. In fact, the Chargers were Super Bowl ready with Breeze. The year Phillip Rivers took him to the division game where the Chargers secondary intercepted Tom Brady. All the guy had to do was fall on the ball. They would have won. The guy decided to run it back. I'll never forget. I will never forget. As he's running back, he had one play where he swings his arms out trying to dodge the guy. Well, Chargers defense on that same play hit the ball and re-recovered it, went on to win, went on to go to another Super Bowl. Breeze, and what ended the game was a costly Breeze rookie interception. Or maybe a year or two interception. But the point is Breeze would not have made those mistakes. But he was not A.J. Smith's guy. And then Breeze suffered a shoulder injury. And I had been involved in the NFL for about 10 years at that point. And I was like, whoa, yeah, it's this shoulder injury. They're making it out worse than it is, Smith and others are. You know, and I researched it because of Hot Off the Wire player news. We tracked injuries and we researched it and we're flabbergasted. Okay, it's not the type of injury you just quit on a player. That was the excuse A.J. Smith. A.J. Smith once said, I can get any moron to coach this team. It's a Super Bowl team. And he hired North Turner. I guess he went out, got his moron. North Turner was phenomenal offensive coordinator, a moron as a head coach. And the Chargers missed a window with A.J. Smith, a bum. I was an analyst in the fantasy sports as well as the NFL side. I would do radio coverage for both fantasy and NFL coverage. So as an analyst, I watched Drew Brees literally every week as I was in San Diego. Most of us who know San Diego football knew what Breeze was, what he could be, and what he would become. I was so angry when they traded him. And sure enough, they got their one Super Bowl, but an overrated head coach, I think, kept them from going to more. And another way to defend Sean Payton in a way is maybe he brought out the best and max out of an undersized quarterback to turn him into a Super Bowl champion. But the point is Breeze left. Won the Super Bowl for the Saints that he could have won for the Chargers, gave Sean Payton the reputation in 2009 that he's still living off of right now. Potential free agents for the Bronx: Kirk Cousins, Jameis Winston, Ryan Tannehill, Baker Mayfield, and Gardner Minshew are some names that I've come across. Winston has played and knows Payton's system. To me, that's a no-brainer. You got to bring him in. And here's what people don't know about Winston when he played for the Saints and started for a while. He was actually a game manager. He was not slinging it out there. So you're getting a different Winston, a more mature Winston. Maybe you can use him as a stopgap if he can minimize his turnovers. The guy's a turnover machine. He will give you a highlight play that won't win you the game and then throw an interception that will lose you the game. You know, but he's played in and knows Payton's system. However, outside of Mayfield, youth is not on the side of any of those quarterbacks. Cousins, Winston, Tannehill. God, I wouldn't even want Tannehill near the compound. And Gardner Minshew's not been around for a few years, and he's like Winston. You know, the guy's going to give you an interception that'll lose you the game. But the difference is Minshew can win you games, too. He knows how to play within themselves, just makes dumb mistakes at times. Cousins is the only quarterback that could be seen as top tier out of that group. And they are in a complete rebuild, and they are in salary cap hell. I don't think if Kirk Cousins was younger, be a great fit, but not now, not right now. Jameis Winston knows the system. Yes, Tannehill, no. No. The guy, any team, I wouldn't even sign up for the veteran minimum. Baker Mayfield, the one thing that all these quarterbacks have in common, Mayfield, Minshew, Winston, and even Cousins the first few games before George's Achilles, but not traditionally. But Winston, Tannehill, Mayfield, Minshew will throw those ugly interceptions at the worst possible time. He's not a quarterback you can have full confidence in a two-minute drill. You have your fingers crossed with those quarterbacks. Again, Cousins is the only quarterback that can be seen as top tier. Look, again, I believe Baden has underachieved. He's got that reputation because he won the Super Bowl. However, many conveniently forget that the Saints were upset during the playoffs too many times to count. He's not the guru many assume, and he never takes responsibility. And again, a bad dude, see Bounty Gate. It's an open circuit within Denver confines that Sean Payton didn't like Wilson from the get-go. So why they would hire him, they fell in love with the name. Oh, we're getting Sean Payton. And they're right. He is a name. Perception trumps truth in this situation. As a hat tip to AFC personnel vet, Sean Payton never liked Russell Wilson, Sports Illustrated. Head on over there if you want to read that article. You know, Payton also made no bones to hide it and ensured all in the facility, meaning all the personnel men, the people who counted, that they knew it. However, they kept that from the public despite the whispers going around. In an interview with Jarrett Bell, where he righteously called out the pathetic excuse of an NFL coach, Nathaniel Hackett, he also stated he had options and a potential Jarrett Stidham for the future. I hear you, but realistically, if in a year I didn't like it, I'm not married to him, Payton told Bell. I like this Jarrett Stidham now. Maybe that's why Russell Wilson never mentioned Payton during when he gave his parting words from Denver. What about Wilson's future? Potential suitors. Atlanta Falcons. Quarterback Desmond Ridder got Arthur Smith fired. They're only a quarterback away from competing for an NFC South championship. And even Raheem Morris, the new head coach, said that Ridder pretty much got Smith fired. Raheem Mostert is the new head coach. He doesn't have much to brag about. He was a loser with his first stint in Tampa Bay. He wasn't the most qualified head coach to get hired based off of his resume. But, you know, I'm kind of happy he got hired. The poor guy was the affirmative action interviewee the last couple of years. So God bless him. I'm glad he got a shot. I'm not a fan of his. I would never have hired him. But I look at that type of situation, man, you can't keep playing the poor guy coming in as the black affirmative action interviewee and then hiring the guy you want. That's what I hate about the Rooney Rule. I mean, Dabo was the hot candidate a couple of years ago. New York went through the same process. I would have just hired Abel and gone, look, screw you guys. I'm the owner. I'm hiring who I want. That is bigotry and a racist process, the Rooney Rule. What about Latino coaches? What about Asian coaches? You know, what about Croatian coaches? You know, you can sit there and fill that in anywhere. You know, Polish. Janikowski was Polish. You see what I'm saying? Just hire the best candidate. What the league needs to do is pressure owners and remind them there's black candidates out there too. There's Latino candidates out there too. You just fired the only Latino head coach. Should I be pissed off because you fired that? No, I don't care. Ron Rivera wasn't a great head coach. But in this situation, Raheem Mostert did not deserve the job, shouldn't have gotten a job, should have never been interviewed for any of these jobs based off his resume. But I'm glad he got the job because they were playing him for the last couple of years as the token interviewee. So God bless him. Prove everybody wrong, have a winning season. I wasn't a Belichick fan when he got hired with the Patriots. I'm like, look what he did in Cleveland. Turned it around. Everybody deserves a second chance. So God bless Raheem Mostert. Let's hope he can sit there and be the next Belichick. If not, he'll be fired as early as 1 year from now, maybe 2 years likely. But they are only a quarterback away from competing for an NFC South championship. So go work your magic. And you're still in the same situation you were with Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay people, Josh Freeman was his head coach. He doesn't, or his quarterback, rather. So he had a loser of a quarterback in Tampa, is entering the Falcons with mediocrity. So let's see what happens there. Pittsburgh Steelers. Quarterback Kenny Pickett isn't developing as the team hoped. The offensive coordinator was fired, and he was seen as a problem. So he wasn't bench per se, injury took him out, but then he lost his job to Mason Rudolph, but he's not going to be released. He is seen as a de facto number one, but they're bringing people to compete with him. Russell Wilson is seen as one person potentially for that team. Look, because Mike Tomlin is a phenomenal coach with a quarterback, we've seen with Big Ben, he can take a mediocre team and make them playoff competitive. Is that enough for Russell Wilson to want to go there? I would say no for either the Falcons or Steelers. Russell Wilson has 1 to 3 years left. I'd be looking for a team that could sit there and go to the playoffs. The Vikings, they'll have to replace Kirk Cousins if he leaves, and he is expected to leave. He's not going to give them a hometown discount. They don't deserve it, neither. The way Zimmer coached him and treated him and abused that offensive position, they missed their windows under Zimmer because Zimmer was an idiot and didn't like Cousins, didn't like the offense, and was a defensive guy, which is why he got fired. Got to give Zimmer some credit. That old man in his 60s dating some hot, young, 30-year-old, some odd women. And this is also Kevin O'Connell's third season. The honeymoon's now over. Regardless of losing Cousins, he can't give the excuse, well, I got to rebuild. No, they expect a winner. So they may push hard to get a Russell Wilson. I'm not sure how good that defense is. Their defensive coordinator, Brian Flores, I'm not a fan of. But he does what I love, one of the few defensive coordinators that still does. He loves using the blitz. The problem with him is he hasn't adapted to this new form of quarterback that you have to spy on and not just blatantly blitz, because they become good at sidestepping. There were a handful of key Minnesota Vikings losses were because the quarterback was able to read the blitz before the play even started, or they sidestepped the blitz. You don't have quarterbacks who are blind with deer in the headlights. You have quarterbacks who look and can recognize the blitzer and plan for it and sidestep him and take off. And that's how the Vikings lost a critical game. So I'm not sure what you get with Brian Flores, but that's a potential stopping point for him if people believe they are a Super Bowl ready team, which I don't think they are. But they are a playoff ready team that can battle to get to that championship game. So I would sit there and say that's one of the better options. Look, the Las Vegas Raiders is another name he's been tied to. He could be a stopgap quarterback there. He gets to play the Broncos for 2 more years. He has a Super Bowl ring. Maybe the Raiders can convince him they're ready. I think the Raiders are easily 2 years away. But they do finally believe that Aidan O'Connell is not a starting quarterback. And, never say never. But from what I saw, I would agree with that. Other suitors, the Tennessee Titans, they have Will Levis, Will Levis. The Commanders, they have the overall number 2 pick. I think they still have Sam Howell. The Bears, they got Justin Fields in the number 1 overall pick. Those teams are in complete rebuild mode. Maybe the Titans not so much complete, and maybe the Bears not so. Well, when I say complete rebuild mode, the Washington Commanders are in complete rebuild mode. The Titans are going into a rebuild mode, and the Bears are in year 2 of their rebuild mode. And look, they're talking about getting rid of Justin Fields to bring in the J.J. Caleb Williams. Yes, that guy is, I predict he will be a bust. Not because of his physical talents. He is physically talented. I believe Caleb will be a bust because he's a vajayjay. He's a pajama boy. He's a prima donna. His whole career since high school has not been about helping his teams win. It's been about how I can look my best and position myself to be the number 1 overall pick. He's not about teams. He's about Caleb Williams. And you top that out with a pajama boy who was like, mama, we lost. That's not a leader. That's a whiner. I mean, we all have emotions. We all have tears. But that kid was just whining, blithering. Mama. That one instance as a senior, less than a year away from being drafted into the NFL, that stuff you see in high school, junior high school, you mature at him. So, no, he will get a head coach fired. All right, back to Russell Wilson. I think Russell Wilson still has 1 to 3 years left. He's got to go to a Super Bowl-ready team. I don't know if there's a Super Bowl-ready team that needs a quarterback, and that's what becomes the issue, So I think he's going to have to go to a team that is maybe 1 to 2 years away, and then take it from there. That would include Pittsburgh, That would include the Vikings. I don't know if it would include the Falcons. I would say not. The Bills are set. The Dolphins are set. The Jets are set. The Patriots are more than 1 to 2 years away. Ravens are set. The Browns, they're not set, but they're stuck with Deshaun Watson. The Steelers, potential. The Bengals are set. The Texans are set. The Jaguars are set. The Colts you know, they are a couple years away. We got to see how Anthony Richardson turns out this year. I don't know. I think Anthony Richardson is going to take anywhere from 2 to 4 to 5 years to fully develop because he was just so raw. I mean, the guy ran first. You know, the Titans rebuild, Chiefs set, Raiders. I don't know how far away they are. Broncos obviously let him go. Chargers have Herbert. Cowboys are set. Eagles are set. Giants. He visited the New York Giants today. You know, I think that the problem with the Giants is not their quarterback. The problem with the Giants is everywhere else. And Brian Daboll got lucky. And they shouldn't have overpaid for the Giants quarterback. And why am I drawing a blank for the Giants quarterback? Who is the New York Giants quarterback? New York Giants quarterback. Oh, Daniel Jones. That's it. Yeah, right after I typed it. Daniel Jones. You know, I think Daniel Jones can still be effective. But that team is easily 2 to 3 years away. Commanders, you know, to me, they're 3 to 5 years away. The Lions, they have Jared Goff. The Packers, Jordan Love. The Vikings, again, a possibility. The Bears, they're going to look into the draft. And if I'm Russell Wilson, why be a stopgap to get replaced? Because being a stopgap, he's not going to be Super Bowl, be ready for Super Bowl. The Buccaneers, they're working with Mayfield. And I think that's a weak division with weak teams. The niceness of that team is they can get into the playoffs. They can win the division. But that's just not a very good division. The Saints, they've just signed Derek Carr last year. Falcons, again, a possibility. I don't know how far away. The Panthers have Bryce Young. The Niners have Brock Purdy. The Rams have Matthew Stafford. The Seahawks, you know, they have Geno Smith. But they're looking to upgrade the position. The Cardinals have Kyler Murray. They're kind of stuck with. So there aren't many, if any, Super Bowl-ready teams. So the teams in play here are teams that he may have to look at. So we will see how this shakes out. Today was the Giants. We'll probably see the Steelers here soon. And with that said, let us move on. Chris Mortensen, rest in peace. Chris Mortensen was a renowned journalist. He covered the NFL for ESPN for over 30 years. He was an NFL insider. He broke significant news. I guess his last big breaking story was Peyton Manning's retirement in 2016. You know, the last 6 to 8 years, he had seeded his way as ESPN's, him and John Clayton as their premier NFL insiders, Adam Schefter. When Clayton and Mortensen reported news, they did the old school ways, in person, phone, working with other reporters. I mean, they worked it. They made ESPN the NFL giant it is. This was my day as I was coming up, and I was seen as an insider because we aggregated so much news so fast, and I had access to all 32 beat reporters for every NFL team. And one thing insiders do is the beat reporters helped them out, and that's who was helping me out. And because I was at a national level with the fantasy sports giving inside information, people like Chris Myers and others thought I was an insider. I could have played that shtick and gone on to do what Adam Schefter did. And Adam Schefter is a big-time insider now with the big Rolodex because of ESPN. You know, he worked it the old school way, did enough to get hired by NFL.com to become their insider, and that's when everything changed. When you make a phone call and you're representing NFL.com, you're going to get callbacks. You're going to get inside information. And then ESPN took him. So God bless him, but he didn't do it like the old school insiders did. And being an insider today is nothing compared to what it was back then. Or the basketball, you have Woj, and I forget the other guy. I don't follow basketball, but he had to work his way into being an insider. Now he's been hired by a big company, and he competes with Woj, Wojcicki as top NBA insiders within the industry. So some people can still do it the old way, and the payoff is becoming an insider for the ESPN's world. But Mort helped build ESPN's football side into what it became. His journalism career began at the South Bay Daily Breeze in 1969. That's here in California. He is native, covering Torrance, California. He worked for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution from 1983 to 1990, and he received the George Polk Award in 87. That's considered a prestigious award. Before ESPN, he also wrote for The National and The Sporting News. And we all know The Sporting News in its heyday was the weekly insider. The weekly sports magazine to get that covered all sports in sports detail versus sporting. Sports Illustrated that did a lot of fluff stories. He joined ESPN in 1991. He covered the NFL year-round, reporting and breaking NFL news on multiple flagship shows. Shows like the NFL Insiders, NFL Live, Sunday NFL Countdown, Monday Night Countdown, and Outside the Lines. These are all shows, if you follow football, you know of them. And you probably had one or two of them as your favorite. You know, he received accolades such as the Pro Football Writers of America's Dick McCann Award. And sadly, he also got stage 4 throat cancer in 2016, but he still contributed to ESPN until 2023. By 2016, he was there more as representing what ESPN was, more than who ESPN is today and the breaking news cycle. He survived by his wife, Mickey, and son, Alex. If I remember correct, his son Alex may have played college ball at Arkansas as a Razorback. I'm not sure, though. Don't quote me. Some notable stories he broke. Peyton Manning's retirement. He was the first reporter on Manning's retirement in 2016. The Deflategate scandal. He played a crucial role in covering that, including quarterback Tom Brady. His reporting shed light on the controversy surrounding the underinflated footballs. And that was against the Indianapolis Colts in the AFC Championship game, where Deflategate, came about. Also, I talked about Bountygate with Russell Wilson and Sean Payton. He was involved in the Bountygate investigation in 2012. He broke the news about Bountygate scandal within the Saints organization that revealed that the program had rewarded players for injuring opponents during games, leading to significant penalties and suspensions. He should have been given a life suspension, period. Not Chris Mortensen, but Sean Payton. He reported on Michael Vick's dogfighting case in 2007, extensive coverage, including details about the investigation charges and legal proceedings. And it had a major impact on Vic's career and the perception towards Vic. In relation to this Bountygate, he covered Sean Payton's suspension. He was instrumental in reporting Sean Payton's role in the scandal. His accurate and thorough coverage informed we, the fans, about the league's actions against the Saints. And, you know, I have a soft spot for players from this perspective. They have short careers. They deserve to earn as much as they would. And anybody who tries to injure them should be barred from the league for life. Their ability to generate income from the sport should be stopped because they tried to hurt somebody. So I did have a run-in, a very positive one, with Chris Mortensen, one of the modern era's first and best insiders. In Minnesota, when my fantasy sports company was arguably the top company in the industry, I was at an event speaking, and I spoke before him. My company, to let some of you know, was called KFFL. We own the Player News. RotoWire, they could barely sniff my hiney. That's how far ahead we were in Player News. RotoWire was the same way. We were light years ahead of them. We had the contracts for CBS, Fox. We even had a contract with NFL that we beat RotoWire on. We had every major industry and the mid-tier companies using our Player News. That's how much we dominated. And so our site was ranked in the top 2,000 in the world. In the world. Not in our segment, but in the world. So, not being a proficient speaker at the time, I was still new to this. I was a proficient speaker. I wanted to change it up. They were there because they were more interested about who they should draft, what their thoughts were about this player versus my thoughts. So I gave them the spiel as what was happening, what they need to look out for, some draft strategy, etc. And then I said, well, look, I have 20 minutes left. I've spoken for 10. I'm done talking. You're not here to hear me talk about information you already know or have your own opinion about. You're here to get my take on fantasy players you're thinking of drafting. And it was a hit. I got a standing ovation. They didn't want me to stop speaking. I spoke right before Chris. I was on fire. As I was leaving the stage, there was a front steps on the side and there were back steps. Chris was coming up the back steps. Obviously, he was probably waiting there at the back steps. I started exiting towards the front steps, if I remember this correctly. You know the story of the fish. 20 years later, it becomes this big. You know, I'm not exaggerating. I just can't quite remember it. And the way I'm remembering kind of sets it up for a better story. But it's true. He was coming up from the back step. I was going to the front steps. He made a beeline towards me. He put his hand out to shake mine and said, "Great speech. You had them wanting more. You are going to be a tough act to follow." That's what I remember. Now, the words I don't remember exactly, but that's what I kind of remember from those lines. And they made my day. I was an up-and-comer. I was an entrepreneur. We were breaking ground. We were seen as the new generation, the ones changing the game, the ones completely changing the landscape, transferring it from feel-good stories, from reporter's report to analytical data forced on those reporters to report. We were changing the game that you all enjoy today. I was stunned. At the time, Mortensen was the premier insider, and even much more important, I'm a guy who deals with vibes, women's intuition, some people call him trusting your gut, males call him. He was a very likable guy. Everybody felt that way about him. I was on cloud nine because he came to me. I wasn't walking towards him. And then when he put his hand out, complimented me, made my day. And I've never forgotten that. It was a special moment in my sports career. I'll never forget that. It was an extension of who he was because the night before when he had arrived, he spent a good half hour talking shop to all of us. And of course, I remember a friend of mine who many people know, he's still an insider to this day. Oh my God, that was like his orgasmic fantasy, becoming an insider, is Adam Kaplan. We had a lot of run-ins, since we're friends, but man, he was tough. I'm tough to work with, tough to deal with. Adam is me exponentially, but we were friends. We came up in the industry, and I remember Adam. All he wanted to know about was the inside info. We wanted to know about the game, how he got started, what he enjoyed about it. So we got a full 40 minutes of about 40 minutes of it. He didn't have much inside information, but of the process, you know, on how we need to carry ourselves, things like that. You know, so what have we lost? Well, I have a soft spot for Chris Mortensen and a soft spot for the late, great John Clayton. I got to know John Clayton more closely than more because I actually was on a couple of panels with John Clayton, and John Clayton was a nerd. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I always had a soft spot for nerds too. So he was a nerd that made it. He was a nerd that came to rule the world. We all remember that John Clayton commercial. He's jamming with his guitar in his room. Mom! You know? But with Mort's passing, my generation has now lost its top two insiders. Then, if you look at the demise of the Pro Football Weekly's magazine that had Whispers, which was pre-internet, which was the only way we could get inside information outside of Jimmy the Greek and a few others on television, we've lost. It's completely changed. You know, you have people who don't have to work as hard, but who get better information. You know, the Catch-22. My point being is these guys trailblazed it, doing it the hard way for the guys today. Today's insiders have it very easy in this technological age. And when you're part of ESPN or one of the leagues, everyone returns your calls. Everyone would return my call. That was when I knew our company had made it. Agents were returning our calls. Agents were giving us information. Agents were sending us stuff. Players, you know. They were asking me for advice at the combine. So, you know, when you make it as a company, yeah, it's easier to get calls returned. You know, again, Mort was old school. He had to work the contacts, unlike many in today's world. And they'll never experience what Mort experienced. Mort was special and beloved by all. Today's personalities aren't always beloved. So Peter King also retired this week. And Big John actually said, "You should bring this up. I'm not a fan of Peter King. Extremely nice guy, genuine human being. I'm just not a fan of him. And let me tell you why. Mort embraced fantasy players, the fantasy sports industry. He saw the value. He knew what was happening. He knew this would take football to another level. I saw that firsthand. The difference between him and someone like Peter King is that King has proven to be a hypocrite. King's a nice man, but he hated fantasy football, and he would denigrate it. I saw that firsthand, too, at a combine. And even though fantasy football helps shed the light on players' actual abilities, i.e. or the importance of data, we introduced data into the mainstream sports world, not rotisserie baseball. It was around with rotisserie baseball, but we football guys took it to the mainstream. We forced beat reporters to get better at their job, and Mort knew what we knew, so he wasn't against fantasy football. Mort was beloved in the fantasy football industry, as John Clayton was. My panel that I attended that Mort was on was football slash fantasy football. King was the hypocrite, denigrating Shody was just another analyst who maximized his SI gig to lift his name to heights not seen by journalists. Albeit, he was very good at his job, and he deserved the heights reach. The problem with working in the industry is that you see beyond what the public sees. And when I saw how much of a hypocrite he was. Well, William, why is he a hypocrite? Because he took money from one of the two big giants. I can't remember if it was FanDuel or DraftKings. Jim Rome was the same way. Denigrate. But then they become financial whores. And when you sell your integrity out, I may acknowledge you as the person you are, but I don't want anything to do with you. You're a loser in my eyes when you sell out your soul. He sold out his soul for money. He didn't like fantasy. Maybe he grew to like it. If that's the case, I still don't owe him an apology because what I have said is true. But that was the difference between Mort and Peter King and Mort and John Clayton in terms of their embracing the fantasy versus the Jim Rome, the Peter Kings of the world. The football players, they embrace it now. Early on, they didn't. They don't embrace it when they get attacked on social media, which is completely wrong. Those are freaking morons, you know. But I don't want to denigrate what I believe with how I look at Peter King. Chris Mortensen's dedication to investigative journalism, breaking news stories, it significantly influenced the landscape of the NFL. His legacy will continue on. Not only with us fans, but with us analysts and insiders. Rest in peace, Mort. You made this sport and ESPN proud. You represented ESPN when they were truly the leaders in worldwide sports versus the garbage they are today. It's only fitting you be recognized from an era where sports united us all. Much love as you begin your next journey. Now, moving on, a couple of quick hits. Let's hit the police blotter. And former Seattle Seahawks stud Richard Sherman. Sherman spent 11 seasons. I think he's 35 now. I'm not sure. But he spent 11 seasons in the NFL with the Seahawks, 49ers, and Buccaneers. Five-time Pro Bowler, three-time first-team All-Pro. Most know Sherman from those 7 years with the Seahawks and the Legion of Boom. He won the Super Bowl in 2013. He finished his career with Tampa Bay in 2021. Real quick on the Super Bowl in 2013, this is why Pete Carroll got fired. 10 years since he won the Super Bowl. It's been years since the Seahawks were actually challenging for the Super Bowl. He was in 71, 72, 73, right around there. He's old. It's time for him to go. That's why they moved on from him, you know, 2013. But we're on Richard Sherman. Again, he finished his career with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2021. Sherman has worked as an analyst for Amazon's Thursday Night Football broadcast for the past two seasons. So it's going to be interesting what they do. They let a low-level journalist, Hack, who isn't worth her salt in gold, stay on the show. The one who said that she lies when she does her sideline reporting. I can't remember who she is. But let's find out. Yeah, let's see here. Let's see. What reporter lied about sideline reporting? Amazon. Let's see what comes up. Oh, nothing. Nothing comes up. Come on, man. Show me and my buddies here some love. Anyway, she should have gotten fired. So it's interesting what they will do regarding Richard Sherman, because this is not his first DUI, which is what he was thrown in jail for. Well, obviously, let out. They never keep you. They keep you overnight. Rainy in the morning, let you go. Former NFL cornerback Richard Sherman was arrested on February 4th, early Saturday morning, on suspicion of driving under influence, per the Washington State Patrol. Sherman was booked at 451.5. You know, he's heading home. He was likely at an after-hours club or grabbing some grub. before heading home. And this, again, it's not his first offense. He was previously charged with DUI and four other misdemeanors in 2021. His comments at the time, I behaved in a manner I'm not proud of. I have been dealing with some personal challenges over the last several months, but that is not an excuse for how I acted, is what he said. Well, what's his excuse this time? He pled guilty to two misdemeanors in 2022 as part of an agreement to resolve the charges, first degree negligent driving and second degree criminal trespass. According to multiple reports, he received a suspended 90-day sentence, was ordered to pay restitution costs, but did not serve any additional jail time. Translation, he got off once, but will he be allowed to get off a second time? I don't know. But with the way we're tribalistic right now, he may get off just for being black. I don't think he should get off because he's just guilty. I don't care if he's white, black, red, gray, or whatever. But Seattle's been pretty good for that. I don't know where he got this ticket, but we'll find out. Again, I don't sugarcoat ugly truths. But that said, I like Richard Sherman. You either love him or hate him. I like the guy. I'm actually bummed that he got another DUI. And the reason I like him, he is very intellectual. He gets some great takes. And I don't always agree with him. Drives me up a wall. But it's a challenging takes that he gives. And that's why I like him. So I hope he can overcome all of this and keep his job, because he is one of the few analysts out there that's worth his weight in gold. I have something here called off the field. Okay, yeah. Off the field, Sherman is respected for his leadership and vocal advocacy for social justice issues, which is one reason he may get off. He may play the social justice card. Will he give a social justice excuse? Will he use social justice to try to force Amazon to keep him on? I hope he does none of that, but you never say never. You know, I think he should be punished. The fact that it's his second time is why, if I'm in Amazon, I'm like, gotta let him go. You know, but that's the only issue. I hope there's some way he can overcome this and keep his job. And if he doesn't, obviously two DUIs doesn't mean he's an alcoholic, but it means he hasn't learned. He's stupid. He can afford a damn Uber. Get the freaking Uber, Mr. Multimillionaire. Oh, man. Let's get some kudos here to The Athletic. Former NFL quarterback Richard Sherman arrested for suspicion of DUI. Let me say something about The Athletic. It's owned by the Uber leftist pig New York Times. But I tell you this, The Athletic is one of the best sources for sports news you will find anywhere. It's, to me, it's better than ESPN, than Fox, than CBS. I think partly because I like its layout. I like its gritty news reporting. So give those Uber leftists over there their props. Quick hits number two. Braylon Edwards, former NFL wide receiver, saves man's life. Heroic intervention. Former NFL wide receiver Braylon Edwards intervened in an assault at a Detroit YMCA, saving an 80-year-old man's life. You know, the moment you say Detroit, I'm like, yeah, I get it. And yet, those people keep reelecting the worst politicians they can. And why do they reelect them? Because they're not white. Braylon Edwards, and that's the truth. It's sad to say, elect the politician who actually has a track record of policies that work, not the politician that says, because we look alike, I will take care of you. Because that's what they've been electing for 50 years, and it hasn't worked out for them. That's my take. Same thing as for a Latino. You know how many times I've been told, why don't you support your Latino brethren, William? Because he's a bad person, because he's a politician, because he's an illegal alien, because he murdered somebody. You know, the fact that we're expected to support somebody because we're Latino or you're black or you're white, that's an epitome of racism. So that's my whole point with Detroit. But I do love the show Bob Loves Abishola, which is set in Detroit. Let's get back to Braylon Edwards. Braylon Edwards was a star at Michigan, first-round pick by the Cleveland Browns in 2005. So you can understand he's been out of the league for a while. He played eight seasons. 2013 was when he left the NFL. He played with the Jets, 49ers, and Seahawks. Some of the assault details, it was a verbal altercation between Malik Ali Smith and an elderly man that escalated into a physical fight, critically injuring the man. He's in critical but stable condition. Edwards heard the argument about music being played too loud. And Charles Barkley, listen up because you're 61 and challenging young black Trump supporters. Edwards saw a 20-year-old grab the victim's head, an 80-year-old ready to slam it on the counter. You hear that, Barkley? That's a likely end result if you try to go after some of these black Trump supporters by punching them in the face like you say you will. To repeat, Edwards saw a 20-year-old grab an 80-year-old victim's head who was ready to slam it on the counter. Look, you slam an 80-year-old victim, his head into the counter, you're literally going to kill him, if not give him severe brain damage and make him a vegetable. Bones are that brittle, are that fragile, are that much more weakened than a young person's bones. So, thank God Braylon Edwards intervened, likely saving the 80-year-old's life. Malik Ali Smith was charged with assault with intent to murder, and he's being held on $250,000 bond. With intent to murder like that, he should not be allowed out of jail. Especially the fact 20-year-old with beating up 80-year-old man. The guy cannot think properly. Doesn't have the capacity to critically think. He is a menace and a danger in the streets. He should not have been given bail. And he didn't want to own up. He fled the incident. Now, his lawyer states he has a history of mental health issues. If that's the case, one, it's still no excuse. Two, he should not have been given any bond. He should still be in jail. Edwards' account was that Edwards described overhearing the argument and stepping in when he realized the severity of the attack. So God bless you, Braylon Edwards. And it looks like you're still sticking to the gym, staying in shape. Good for you. But thank you for protecting a senior citizen. Richard Sherman, I hope you get the help you need. Chris Mortensen, much love as you now have begun your next journey. And Russell Wilson, you were given a raw deal by Sean Payton, who's not a good dude. But you've got to get the prima donna attitude out of your psyche. And with that, everybody, that is Points on the Board, episode 76. To remind you, you can find this show at Grumblings Media. You can find this show and other shows on our social media platforms as well. YouTube and Rumble under the profile Grumblings Media, as well as traditional podcast outlets, Pandora, Spotify, Apple, and Google. My friends, until next time, this is William Del Pilar, your conservative Latino, for Points on the Board. And until next time, I bid you adieu.